Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Nobody would give Ian MacDonald a job when he came to South Florida more than 30 years ago. So he says he started a company. MacDonald was born in England, raised in Nigeria, and now runs a company that makes underwater lights for boats. He has 11 employees, 9 of whom are based in Fort Lauderdale. The combination sales office, showroom, and assembly area is in a small industrial park cradled in the northeast corner of the I-95-595 exchange. MacDonald's company is called Underwater Lights USA, though it's better known in the marine industry for the brand Sea Vision. It designs and assembles lights that go below the waterline in boats and yachts.
Well, this is all machined here in the Fort Lauderdale, South Florida area.
That's MacDonald describing his lights in his showroom. These lights shine out into the water. It can be a beautiful ghostly effect, visually setting a boat off from the infinite blackness of water beyond.
Glass face here with a flange that is the initial protection.
It's not all that different from the uncertainty MacDonald sees for his business beyond the shores of the United States. About 25% of Sea Vision's business is overseas, and that business has been tough to come by. He's not alone. Exports out of South Florida's seaports and airports have been falling for 3 years now. About $55 billion worth of stuff flowed through South Florida on its way to the rest of the world in 2015. Now, that's a lot of aircraft parts, cell phones, and medical supplies. It's even cotton, perfumes, and vaccines. Sometimes the stuff is made here. Oftentimes, it's here only to be shipped out of town or flown overseas to customers. But the value of all those exports has been falling for 3 years, and there are lots of reasons why. A strong U.S. dollar against international currencies makes made-in-the-USA products more expensive for foreign buyers. Weaker foreign economies, especially those in Latin America, and for 5 months last year, the government agency that acts as an insurance policy for U.S. companies selling to foreign buyers was essentially out of business. Now, we'll have more on that later on in this program. The Export-Import Bank of the United States was sanctioned by the federal government to help expand U.S. exports. It acts as a lender of last resort and insurance policy. If an American company is selling something to a customer overseas, the U.S. company can buy insurance from the Ex-Im Bank to ensure they get paid even if their foreign customer doesn't pay. Demotech in Miami Lakes is one of the hundreds of small companies buying that kind of insurance. Demotech makes surgical sutures and scalpel blades. Luis Arguello is the CEO of the company.
We have a stable growth for the last 7 years, and we project every year that we're going to grow more. That did not occur in 2015. Not only we did not grow, we had a smaller revenue in 2015 than 2014.
About $3 million smaller. And Arguello says some of that is because he couldn't get his overseas orders insured in case those customers didn't pay. Now, that takes us back to the five-month stretch last year that Arguello's company and others couldn't buy that insurance from the Export-Import Bank. So every few years, the bank has to go to Congress to be reauthorized. It had been little more than a formality for years, but not last year. Republican opposition to the bank led it to losing its charter. Critics argued its insurance and loans banked by U.S. taxpayers give outsized benefits to big companies like Boeing and GE. And most of the dollars the bank uses do go to support big business. Last year, only 25% of the bank's loans and insurance went to small companies. Now, that's because the dollar amounts involving small firms are much smaller than doing a deal with Boeing selling an entire fleet of airplanes overseas. But 90% of the bank's policies involved small companies. So individually, they may not amount to a lot of money, but there are a lot of companies paying the bank to make sure they get paid when doing business in Europe or Latin America or someplace else. So on July 1st, the bank couldn't do that any longer. Congress had not reauthorized it. It was 5 months later when a majority of both Republicans and Democrats okayed the bank again, allowing it to restart business. And during that five-month lapse, again, Luis Arguello of Demotech here in South Florida.
Our revenues were hurt, our profits were hurt, and we did not grow employees. We should have hired more employees in 2015 than in 2014. That definitely did not happen.
And at Sea Vision, the marine lighting company in Fort Lauderdale, President Ian MacDonald says he had to delay a $50,000 order by an Italian yacht builder.
There was a lot of unknowns there, and they were building a relatively large yacht for the first time, which is very risky. And we didn't know where they're financing and who the clients were or anything. So it was too much risk for us to take at that point in time without the bank's guarantees and help.
And he says they were able to successfully put off the customer long enough until Congress voted in December to reopen the bank. Now, in this program, we're going to talk with the bank's chairman about having to sit out of the export market for 5 months, the business of the bank, and the difficulties of selling American products in a world where economic growth is slowing down. But why exports? And why here?
We need to export more of our goods.
This is President Obama during his 2010 State of the Union address.
Because the more products we make and sell to other countries, the more jobs we support right here in America. So tonight, we set a new goal. We will double our exports over the next 5 years, an increase that will support 2 million jobs in America.
Now, that didn't happen. American exports did not meet the president's 2010 goal of doubling in 5 years. They came up way short of that goal, growing by 28%. Exporting through South Florida didn't fare much better. In fact, compared to 2010, the value of exports last year through our airports and seaports barely grew at all. But jobs in the trade and logistics industry, and that's the formal name for the business moving all this stuff around, has been a bright spot for the regional economy. In the last 6 years, about 80,000 jobs have been added in the trade, transportation, and utilities industry here in South Florida. That's more than either construction or tourism, and they tend to pay more than the average salary. So still to come, gauging the export economy with one small business in Broward County.
Well, we basically deal with toys, boats, any way you look at it, and we sell trinkets to boats. When people are confident, they spend on their toys. When they're not confident, they don't.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. In the last segment of the program, we met Ian MacDonald, the England-born, Nigerian-raised Fort Lauderdale Marine Lighting Company owner. Well, this is one of his workers, Millie, screwing in wires to an igniter assembly at his plant in Fort Lauderdale. This assembly will be put into a lighting device and then installed into a boat's hull, just under the waterline to shine out into the water. It's not a big operation. Sales are less than $10 million per year. But it's part of the much larger multi-billion dollar export economy here. And for MacDonald's company, Underwater Lights USA, that business, at least the foreign business, isn't that good.
I think internationally it's very unstable at the moment. There's a lot of uncertainty in Europe, Turkey, the Central and South American region, obviously Venezuela, Brazil, is very difficult to do business with now. The marine industry in New Zealand has collapsed. So worldwide, it's very uncertain. It's hard to predict. It's hard to gauge what is going to happen.
That's about 25% of your overall business. So it's not an insignificant exposure you've got.
No, it's a significant amount.
How are you managing that kind of uncertainty, and how does it compare to other uncertain times?
Well, in reality, the U.S. is doing well. So we're confident that the business will do well over the next year. What would be great is if we'd fire on all cylinders. So the Europe, the Americas, Australia, all these, if everything was going great, then we'd have a big smile on our face. Unfortunately, in life, it never does. So you just have to accept that there will be some downside in these areas. We're hardly selling anything to Brazil at the moment, understandably. Venezuela the same. But at the same time, Mexico's getting better and stronger. Europe is very difficult to do business with at the moment. It's almost reminiscent of the US 3 or 4 years ago. Everybody's bargain hunting. There's no certainty. Contracts are difficult to sign.
How is this impacting your day-to-day business and your ability to grow? Are you able to find U.S. customers to replace those Brazilian and Venezuelan customers and those Turkish customers?
Not really. We're quite aggressive in the States, and we're trying to grow our business here. It's very competitive. I think the biggest problem we have is doing any sort of prediction. And it's nice in business when you can do a prediction and you can work to that prediction. So I think in the States, we can definitely do that, and we know where to direct resources and people. In Europe, it's basically keeping the balls in the air and juggling and reacting to the market, not what you'd like it to be, but what it is in reality.
You know, the export business here locally has been an area of strength as we came out of the Great Recession. The commodity boom was still happening in Latin America, particularly for South Florida. That was a real godsend, not only in terms of generating capital to come back to South Florida, but also just putting the trade and logistics business back to work. What is your business mix and the concerns that you're voicing for your Latin American business, but also your European business? What do you think that is illustrative of for the broader economy here locally?
Well, we basically deal with toys, boats, any way you look at it, and we sell trinkets to boats. And that's the reality of it. So while when people are confident, they spend on their toys. When they're not confident, they don't. And it's really that simple. So I don't see any growth in Latin America significant for the next few years. I don't see it in Europe. What growth will come will be from the US side. The US wealthy people buying boats in Europe. And that's really what we expect to see. So I don't see Europe being anything but flat for the next 2 or 3 years.
Have you had to reposition the business as you've seen that exporting potential, that exporting opportunity really get squeezed and reduced?
Well, we've had to take actions like, I mean, we haven't had price increases for a number of years. We're not able to initiate any price increases, even though we'd like to.
Have you seen your material cost, your labor costs go up?
Our labor costs have been pretty much the same. We held our labor costs stagnant for a number of years, obviously, like everybody else. We're now starting to increase payroll numbers to everybody, giving bonuses and annual pay rises again.
So this means the profit's going to get squeezed. You can't raise your product prices, but your costs per unit and your cost of labor are going up.
That's exactly correct. So the positive is that the U.S. is booming, and we expect to do better profitability here. Some of that profitability is going to contribute to our businesses overseas and just basically keeping them running until the good times roll again.
With that international outlook, the change in the business mix, some of the pricing constraints and cost increases, is 2016 going to be better, the same, worse than what you've experienced over the past few years?
I think it's going to be difficult. The euro has collapsed. We've lost 30 or 40% of value. So that has compounded our problems dealing with the European market. The same applies to Latin America. The value of the currencies there has collapsed. So it makes it really hard to maintain a price, be profitable, and do business.
You may be keeping your prices steady in U.S. dollars, but for the what Brazilian customers you may still have, or even the Mexican customers you are cultivating, and the Turkish customers, Italian customers, their cost has gone up because the value of their currency to buy your product has gone down against the U.S. dollar.
Well, yes, in reality that's the case, but what we do is we deal in euros out of our European office with a bank account in Cannes in France, and dollars here. So
you're the one getting hit with that currency issue.
Yeah, we're taking the hit.
Have you rethought that process as you've essentially seen that European currency shrink by 30% as it gets into your account and you bring it back to Fort Lauderdale?
It's a big problem in knowing how to handle it. We don't want to lose customers when it's a very difficult trading situation for them. They're very price sensitive. The other problem we have is that we deal with a lot of big yachts that are built over in Europe. And the build time from when we start to price it to when we actually deliver the goods and to when we get paid could be a 12-month or even longer process. So it's very hard to go back and reprice something that's already been priced.
For a small company like yours, 11 people total, 9 of them in Fort Lauderdale, 2 in Europe, under $10 million in revenue, when you've got one of those big yachts being built for 18 months and the currency risk of the dollar fluctuation against the euro, that's a significant financial risk to your bottom line.
Yes, it is. It is. I think we've got very good at playing that risk and mitigating it, but it is always there in the back of your mind every time you do a deal.
How do you manage that for a small company? You're not Goldman Sachs in the currency markets and what's called the Forex, the foreign exchange markets, buying, you know, future contracts on dollar-euro exchange rates. How does a small company here you know, write off of 595 and 95, manage that currency risk?
Well, basically, our policy is, and rightly or wrongly, we try and maintain our prices, whether it's dollar or euro. We then work very hard to introduce better products, cheaper products, more efficiencies to increase our bottom line. So by increasing our bottom line, we can survive. The drop in oil prices, for example, helps. The material price drop helps. So at the moment, we've been able to add profitability, lower costs, and we're okay at the moment. But it's something we have to look at on a monthly basis.
It strikes me when you take a look at some of the countries that you mentioned that are in your international portfolio, clearly some of them are first world, very developed countries, very mature markets and mature ways of doing business, Germany, Italy, those kinds of things. Some of them are maybe second world, you know, Turkey, Brazil, still developing, still some challenges, Mexico. It's a different risk profile for working with those customers, isn't it?
Yeah, and gauging the risk is very difficult. For example, in Europe, we have no idea how well the companies are doing. There is no way you could check. A lot of the finances are hidden somewhere. So we when the downturn came and we had a crash, we lost 60% of our clients in the course of about 9 months. We didn't lose one client, they just didn't exist anymore. And some of them were ordering right up to the time they closed the gates. So you're assuming that because they're putting good orders in, that they're healthy and successful. The guys that were doing the orders had no idea that the company was in big trouble. So, you know, these are huge problems that, to deal with.
And in developed markets, in European markets, that you're seeing this risk. That's not a place, if you're not in the exporting business, you would think there'd be a big business risk to do a deal with a German company or an Italian company.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. That's what really caught us by surprise. We're talking about very well-known boating companies that are long established that we assumed were successful and financially successful too. We found out pretty quickly that was not the case.
Any hiring plans for the year ahead if your business plan works out for how you think it will in 2016?
Yeah, we're actually looking to hire more on the tech side. We need young minds now in the business to keep us updated on the new lighting techniques that are coming through. We're a bit too old in the tooth to understand all this anymore.
Ian MacDonald with Underwater Lights USA, part of the export economy here in South Florida. We spoke with him at his Fort Lauderdale office, where he hopes to be hiring this year, despite his expectations that business overseas will be hard to come by. Still to come on our program, getting the Export-Import Bank back in business, just as the global economy is slowing.
Everybody is fighting tooth and nail for every single sale. So if we don't make the sale because a small business here in South Florida doesn't have the backing, their competitor in Germany or Korea or Japan is more than happy to step in and do that.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're talking about the export business in South Florida today. More than $53 billion worth of airplane parts, cell phones, and medical supplies made their way through South Florida's seaports and airports last year. It marked the third year, though, of declines in value of exports through our region. A stronger U.S. dollar overseas against international currencies, especially those in Latin America, make American-made products more expensive. Add to that the recession in Brazil, the economic slowdown in Colombia, two of the biggest destinations for exports out of South Florida, and you can see the tough environment. And then for 5 months last year, the Export-Import Bank of the United States couldn't do any new business. Now, this is an independent agency of the federal government. Its biggest line of business is providing trade insurance for American companies. Say you grow palm trees here and sell them in the Caribbean. You ship tens of thousands of dollars worth of trees. You buy insurance from the Export-Import Bank that will pay you even if your customer in the Caribbean doesn't. But the bank lost its charter in July after Congress did not reauthorize it. Some Republican congressmen argued the bank's business unfairly benefits big American corporations. The bank's supporters say the bulk of its insurance policies go to small companies, underpinning their efforts to expand into new markets overseas. By December, the bank was back in business with bipartisan support from Capitol Hill. Fred Hochberg is the chairman and president of the Ex-Im Bank of the United States. He says the bank's business fell by 40% last year because it couldn't operate normally, plus the slowdown in international business. We spoke with him during a stop in Miami.
No new loans, no new authorizations, no new insurance, and it really had an impact on American business.
What was that impact?
Well, I'll give you one example in the satellite industry, and we compete head-to-head with the French on satellite technology. We lost three deals, one to Canada and two to France, because part of the bid, if you're bidding for this overseas sale, you need to come with export credit agency or government-backed lending. Sometimes they can get the deal done without it, but you're not even going to be considered unless you do. Think about buying a house. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a good job and a bank line of credit, no buyer's going to take you, seller's going to take you very seriously.
And so as the 5 months wore on, as the Export-Import Bank could not do any reauthorizations, could not provide the kind of trade insurance that it traditionally has had, especially for small and medium-sized businesses, but also larger clients like General Electric and Boeing, what was that impact on Main Street? What was the impact with the trade of the businesses, the U.S. businesses that you work with?
Well, a lot of the smaller companies, there's one right here in right nearby in Miami called Demitech, a company I've got to know that does dental. Well, it started as dental medical technology. The medical did so well, they haven't expanded to dental yet. But we were not able to give them insurance. So when they ship overseas, it's like driving your car without car insurance or not having health insurance. So you make shipments overseas, you're going to have to take a chance, you'll get paid. Our insurance covers the event you're not going to get paid. So some stopped shipping. Some went on their own and took a chance. Mm-hmm. Some, I'm happy to say, were able to find the private sector because we would like the private sector to do more. We're really there when the private sector can't do it or won't do it. So some really took a chance. Some had to curtail their sales. And I think I will give you this number. We were up a little over a month, 5 weeks, and we have already authorized over $1.7 billion worth of insurance and short-term loans for the small business community.
What does that pace normally look like for a five-week period?
That's vastly accelerated.
And is it because of the backlog
there
of business?
Right. Huge backlog of lapsed policies that people were anxious to get reinstated so they can begin to serve their customers and not lose those sales to foreign competitors. You know, global growth rates are down.
Yeah.
And as a result, everybody is fighting tooth and nail for every single sale. So if we don't make the sale because a small business here in South Florida doesn't have the backing, their competitor in Germany or Korea or Japan is more than happy to step in and do that.
The knock against the bank and why it wasn't reauthorized by the time its previous charter expired was in part to say, allow market forces to work. This is a distortion in international trade by providing the U.S. taxpayer-backed insurance of deliverable of goods overseas. Did you see those distortions, if there were any, either be exaggerated during the five-month period off, or were they eliminated with the exit of the bank?
Listen, the financial markets are not perfect. The financial market, and we operate to as a backdrop, as a alternative when the financial markets aren't functioning properly. So, and let me add, there are now 85 export credit agencies around the world. So we have 84 other countries, and China, for example, has two of them. Korea has two different export credit agencies. So this is the way business is done globally. We may not like it. We have the best private sector financing system in the world. We have the best free market system in the world, but best isn't perfect. And frequently small businesses in particular really get pinched. Banks prefer to do larger deals than small deals. Banks prefer to do them in the developed economy, advanced economies, not developing economies. Two-thirds, Tom, of the loans we make are in the developing world.
Yeah. This brings up a couple of interesting points. The developing world, the emerging markets, a trade opportunity that this economy here in South Florida is particularly exposed to because of Latin America and Brazil, Argentina, Venezuela particularly. But also there is, under your reauthorization, under the ability for the Export-Import Bank of the United States to get back up in business, you're not going to be able to lend as much as you once were. You've had your ability to lend curtailed. Let me tackle the emerging market potential first. You're getting back into business with the Export-Import Bank at a time where Brazil is in an economic recession. Argentina is in an economic depression, arguably. Argentina is barely growing. We're seeing Chile and Peru, their growth rates slow down considerably, and put aside some of the concerns even over in Asia and China. That is not an attractive business environment for your clients to be selling overseas, is it?
Well, you're exactly right, Tal. I mean, this is a very tough environment. Global growth rates are down in the threes. They were up close to five, but we've seen growth shaved in China, growth shaved in a lot of Latin America where you have a lot of commodities. So this is a time, as a business person, you need every single tool in your toolkit to compete. That's why the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is important. It's why EXIM is important. You need every single tool to compete effectively.
Does it, however, put more risk on the portfolio of the Export-Import Bank as you're ensuring the payment of goods an American company is selling into Brazil and the Brazilian buyer may or may not be there depending upon that economy?
Well, certainly does put a crimp on it, but what it does is we have... We report our default rates to Congress every 90 days. We're running less than 0.25%. And I'll tell you another fact, which is totally in all candor. People don't like the default on the U.S. government. It's a bad idea. That's why we used to have gunboat diplomacy. We've got an army, a navy, an air force. But importantly, people don't default on the U.S. government.
You're not going to put that Defense Department, though, to the shaving cream importer
Venezuela. You don't need to. But frankly, the fact is people know it's not a good idea because the United States will enforce its debts.
So you talk about your defaulted loans, very small of the overall portfolio, but you still have to have that rainy day fund. You have to set aside assets that you can't lend for concern of issuing bad debt and necessarily not getting paid. One of the components of the reauthorization says you have to hold more money back.
Right.
Yeah, beyond perhaps 5%. Right now it's called the loan loss reserve, 5% of the portfolio held back. But it may grow beyond 5%.
Well, it has to be a minimum of 5% is what the new reauthorization calls for. We're right now, we were at 4.7. We will go back up to 5. A year ago, we were at 5.7. So our natural reserves are based on how our portfolio is performing. But regardless, the new authorization, the new law says, regardless of what you think the defaults are, you have to have a minimum of 5%. We're going to be fully compliant with that without any question, so that we make sure that we can be a viable backstop. One thing the Export-Import Bank of the United States needs to do by international law is be self-sustaining. So we are totally self-sustaining. The fees we collect cover any loan loss reserves, all of our operating expenses. And in fact, over the last 20 years, we have sent to the taxpayers $7 billion in excess revenue.
And these fees are the premiums that companies pay for the assurance.
That's right, exactly. Yeah.
So I want to get back to the ability to loan for the Export-Import Bank. So your loan loss reserves, you'll get back up to that 5%. You'll hold back those dollars from the market. In the meantime, the total amount that you can loan is going to be reduced ever so slightly by about $5 billion, from $140 billion to $135 billion. So is this essentially beginning a potential trend toward shrinking the Export-Import Bank?
Well, certainly there were a number of members of Congress who wanted to do that, and that's why our maximum amount of loans outstanding has been reduced from $140 billion down to $135 billion. We currently have about $100, $102 billion portfolio. So at the moment, we've got plenty of headroom. before that really becomes something we're going to have to manage carefully.
Longer term, though, Fred, and you may not be there in 2019 when reauthorization comes up again, but is this the trend of the beginning shrinkage of the Export-Import Bank? As reauthorization moves forward in the next 4 or 5 years, could it go from 135 to 125?
Well, I'm not sure I can speculate. I can say the following, though. We got a majority of the Republicans in the House to vote for it. We had an over 313 in the House, a couple of votes in the Senate, 65, 68 in the Senate. We had an overwhelming support in both chambers, as we did in 2012. So there was a lot of debate. We had a lapse that was very damaging. But at the end of the day, we had a very strong, we did not win by one vote. We won by a very large majority. We need to keep working on that. We need to keep delivering for the American people, keep delivering more jobs here in Florida, more jobs at companies like Demotech, which are small businesses. Earlier, it was up in Central Florida at Siemens, makes wind.
The German conglomerate.
German conglomerate that's located here in Florida, 5,000 jobs in the state. Why? Because it's a good place to do business, and they're selling wind power out of Orlando. That's their headquarters. Was also in a company called Embraer, a Brazilian company. Brazilian company that's located here in Florida. Headquarters are up in Fort Lauderdale. Mm-hmm. They manufacture in Melbourne. They're going to have about 1,600 employees here. So there are a lot of foreign companies that are here. And when they export and put Americans to work, we will support them as well.
And you have encountered this on Capitol Hill. I can already hear the conservative part, the very conservative part of the Republican Party saying, Fred, you now, your bank, the United States Export-Import Bank, is underwrite insurance ultimately for corporations based in Germany and in Brazil. Yeah, they may have operations here in the United States, but why doesn't the German government underwrite that? Why doesn't the Brazilian government underwrite that?
We are focused on one thing and one thing only. That is U.S. jobs. We're indifferent to who owns the company, but who's doing the work. Who's taking home a paycheck to their husband and wife and their kids? That's what we're focused on. So we want to welcome, if companies move here, as the two we just talked about, Siemens from Germany, Embraer from Brazil, because this is a good place to do business, we should celebrate that. Just like when people come to this country and become a citizen, they're Americans. So when companies come here and they make the investment here and they hire Americans to do the work, we're about the workers. We're not about where the corporate nameplate is.
In 2019, when the Export-Import Bank is back in front of Congress to stay in business, to reauthorize its charter to stay in business, what is your advice today for your successor who will be there making that argument?
Well, I think the most important thing that I've learned from this is, one, we need to make clear what we deliver to the American people and what we deliver in the small business community. One thing the new charter calls for, 25% of all a loan authorization to go to small businesses, up from 20.
Is that 20% of volume or of dollars?
That's of the dollars. It's actually 90% of our customers are small businesses. Vast overwhelming majority of customers. And those are small businesses as defined by the SBA. So this is a government-wide definition. It's not my definition. It's the government-wide definition. So we need to be continually focused like a laser on small business. But we have to remember, when I mentioned Embraer or Siemens, those exports from those large companies, all those small businesses are riding along with them. They're part of their supply chain, and that's an integral part of making sure. So if we want small business to thrive, we need those large exporters to thrive as well.
Fred Hochberg, Chairman and President of the Export-Import Bank of the United States. Now, still to come, more of our conversation, including the potential of trade assistance with Cuba.
For Cuba to get a credit rating from any government entity or any bank is very difficult today.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. We're talking about exports. We have more information about exports out of South Florida on our website at WLRN.org. Trade is no doubt an important part of the South Florida economy. Jobs in that industry have been growing, and they tend to pay more than the average wage. It was 6 years ago when President Obama announced he wanted to double American exports in 5 years. It did not happen. Exports grew by 28% nationwide, far short of the goal. Compared to 2010, exports out of the ports and airports here have barely grown, and they've fallen in value for the past 3 years. For a time last year, the Export-Import Bank of the United States could not do any business to help American exporters, like offer insurance they get paid by their foreign customers. After 5 months in limbo, Congress finally reauthorized the bank in December. It was back in business, just as the global economy is slowing, but new trade opportunities are on the horizon, including the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal between the U.S. and 11 other countries. Plus, there's the developing relationship between the U.S. and Cuba. So back to our conversation now with the Ex-Im Bank Chairman, Fred Hochberg.
One of the advantages we have in our economy is actually we are less export dependent than most of the world. You know, exports are about 13-14% of GDP.
The United States is
the United States
export,
as
sure,
a whole.
Yeah.
Florida is an important market. We do a lot of commodities out of Florida, a lot of cotton that goes to Mexico and Central America for clothing. So I think it's, of course, it's a concern. You know, we're all, a rising tide does lift all boats. So if when there's a problem in China or problem in Brazil, that's not going to be good for the United States, without question. But one thing I do admire, and that is U.S. companies are very innovative. U.S. companies have an ability when there's a cost squeeze to find innovative new ways to produce products at a reduced cost. For example, we've seen the price of oil come down. In many ways, U.S. companies are better able to find ways to squeeze out excess costs, squeeze out redundancies, in the cost structure so that they can actually meet the current demand at lower prices. So I think that we are actually better suited to do that than probably any other economy in the world.
The business of Ex-Im was impacted by 5 months during this window where it was not authorized to give out new loans. The backlog of business, as you work your way through it, at what point do you think you'll kind of return to the normal pace of business at Ex-Im?
Well, I think there are a couple of factors there. We hit our high watermark in terms of loans, guarantees, and insurance in 2012, sort of the aftermath of the global financial crisis. Banks have a lot more liquidity. Banks are better capitalized. Banks are better able to support businesses. So our volume is down a little bit from that peak, largely because, down actually by about 50%, due to the fact that the banks are more liquid.
50%? 15? 50.
50.
Wow.
Secondly, there are, as a result of this slowdown, far less giant infrastructure projects in energy and natural gas, mining, and so forth. So there is less demand from that side. The demand in small business is still there and is still very strong, and that's an integral part of what we do. So that doesn't vary. And I can see a period where our small business as a percentage could keep growing because the larger businesses actually had more of a fall off.
Can you share with me any internal forecasting of business?
You know, we normally don't do that because we'll probably be wrong on the forecast. We're demand driven.
Yeah.
So we're really you know, it's a question of factors of global growth and bank liquidity. Those are the two real drivers of our growth more than anything.
So with the environment of plenty of liquidity in the banking system, there's lots of cash out there, no doubt about it. But with the global growth slowing down, does that mean more demand, less demand for the kind of products you guys have?
Well, I think that we're seeing a little less demand, mm-hmm. but we're also seeing a little more demand, I will tell you, from weaker credits, which is as it should be. We're there as a backstop when the conventional banking markets aren't there. So when we have a customer that can graduate from Ex-Im and go to the private sector, that's a win. That's not a loss, that's a win. So I think that during the financial crisis, even AAA-rated companies were having trouble getting loans and came to us. They have gone away because now the banking system will handle them. So, of course, we're going to deal with some of the
less creditworthy,
yeah. Or, as I said, two-thirds of our work is in the developing world. Those are places that it's always historically harder to get a loan or guarantee.
Is Cuba on your agenda at all?
We are prohibited from doing. First of all, Congress has to address the embargo issue, and it's also written into our charter that we cannot do business in Cuba. So there are a few more steps that have to happen before Cuba can participate.
So presumably, if the trade embargo was changed or dropped, your charter would also have to be addressed. Is that right?
Our charter would have to be addressed. There's one other factor with Cuba. Cuba, unlike other countries that have sort of been somewhat outside of the system, Burma, Iran, as to name two, they've been a member of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. They have kept up their membership. Cuba lapsed in the 60s. So for Cuba to get a credit rating from any government entity or any bank is very difficult today because they've not been a member of the IMF. So first step is they've got to join the IMF so we can begin around the world, credit agencies can begin to give a credit rating to Cuba in order for them to really participate more fully in the global economy.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership still has an unknown fate with the United States Congress. This is a large trade deal, obviously, with the United States and many countries, particularly around Asia. What does that potential provide possibly for the Ex-Im Bank? What kind of business flow could come from that?
Well, this is a very key market. We're talking about the market of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's the United States, Japan, Mexico, and nine other countries on the Pacific Rim. Critical, it's 40% of the world's GDP. You know, let's remember, when NAFTA was enacted in the 90s, there were 12 free trade agreements in the entire world. Today, there are over 600. We need to get on the bandwagon, or we're going to get left behind. And these are fast-growing countries like Vietnam that we can do a lot of business in and would like to do more business in. And this is going to be one way of knocking down those barriers.
If the Trans-Pacific Partnership is approved and the United States is party to it, it comes at a time when, while you still have plenty of loan and insurance capacity, ultimately you are authorized for a smaller portfolio than you once had. Could that impact the business that small business is able to do with the TPP countries?
It certainly has an impact. I mean, right now, you know, we had actually requested $160 billion lending cap.
Which was an increase.
An increase from 104. We requested an increase because, again, our authority goes out to 2019. We did the best job we could in forecasting what we believe our needs are. Congress did not concur with that. We have 135. We're going to work within that constraint. And we're going to work hard to work within that and work largely with a lot of companies and, again, finding them, helping them find ways to transition to the private sector, because that's our goal. Our goal is to be a backstop. Our goal is to encourage banks to say, you know what, you can, these are good credit-worthy accounts. You don't have to leave them with us.
Fred Hochberg, chairman and president of the Export-Import Bank of the United States. He's back in business now, but with new congressional constraints. The bank has to increase the work it does with small businesses, such as those making up the export industry here in South Florida. Still to come, South Florida as the shopping cart for Latin America.
We have all the largest shipping lines come to South Florida. All the largest freight forwarders and logistics companies have Latin America headquarters here. The largest computer and technology distributorships are all here. They have probably found the last year or two difficult, and they'll probably find the next year a little challenging.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. The export business has never been easy for small companies that make up the bulk of the South Florida economy. There are bigger competitors elsewhere, political risks overseas, changing regulations here and abroad, and of course, volatile costs. But South Florida has its geography and has used that to become the shopping cart for Latin America. But that shopping cart is not as full as it once had been. Through November, last year saw a 10% drop in exports out of South Florida. That's almost twice the drop compared to the national falloff in exports.
What's contributing to that pace? Brazil.
Ken Roberts runs World City. It's a company based in Coral Gables that closely tracks international trade data and the people behind it.
It's largely a Brazil story, and will continue to be a Brazil story in 2016, I believe.
It's the recession in Brazil that is continuing to take hold.
They've got political and economic risk that's extraordinary. It's very significant. I was actually thinking about BRIC the other day, Brazil, Russia, India, China. I think it's down to, you know, they say there's no I in team, but there is an I in BRIC, and that's about all that's left at the moment because Brazil's in big trouble. Russia is what it is, and even Mexico's still in some challenges, but Mexico's doing okay. But India seems to be doing quite well. But Brazil is an issue for South Florida because about 17% of all, 16, 17% of all our trade is with one country, Brazil.
trade and logistics has been a strong point for the Miami economy. Strong point in terms of job growth, strong point in terms of paychecks. These are paychecks that are traditionally higher than the usual hospitality paychecks that contribute to the low wage environment here. So when you see a double-digit drop in the export business through the Miami ports in Port Miami, Port Everglades, Miami International, what does that mean?
I think there is impact. So the airports and seaports themselves pay greater attention to tonnage, TEUs, containers. But when you look at the value, it does have an impact because at the end of the day, that's what people are buying and paying for things. So you do see an impact because what's going to be happening is as Latin America has challenges, as risk goes up, banks are much less, they'll tighten their restrictions. It'll be harder for companies to export unless they want to extend more credit. If you extend more credit, you're taking risk. You may not get paid. So it'll have an impact that flows through from banking to law to warehousing to trucking to shipping air cargo. Everybody will see it in their business.
When we see that kind of continuing stair-step drop in Miami trade led by the drop in Miami exports, can the industry withstand it? Is it positioned for those kinds of headwinds?
I believe it can. I've been around long enough to remember when Doral was known as Airport West, and there was basically not much west of 87th Avenue. Anybody who's been to Doral in the last few weeks and tried to get out of there in a short period of time knows there's been a lot of growth in Doral. We have all the largest shipping lines come to South Florida. All the largest freight forwarders and logistics companies have Latin America headquarters here. The largest high computer and technology distributorships are all here. They have probably found the last year or two difficult to some extent, and they will probably find the next year a little challenging. But Latin America overall is becoming increasingly important to global companies' business. In terms of a medium to long-term trend, in our experience working with the multinationals here, we found that anywhere from 2 to 4% of their global revenues used to be in Latin America, and now that's easily bumping into the 4 to 6 range, sometimes 6 to 8. And there's always exceptions. There's companies like Clorox and Caterpillar and some others, Telefonica, which have big exposure in Latin America, which can be tough in times when it's tough for Latin America, but can be very good when it's good in Latin America. And the last 10 to 15 years have been quite good for Latin America relative to its history before that. I think most of what you're seeing in Latin America now is a more mature economy dealing with difficult times. The commodities issue is very difficult. It's not just oil, it's copper in Chile, et cetera. There's a number of issues in Latin America that will have to be worked through.
As those issues are worked through, it's important to admit South Florida has benefited from growing globalization and the ability for American goods to go just about everywhere. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountains.